This is Laura Dierda with the Becker's Healthcare Podcast. I'm thrilled today to be joined by Dr. Caroline Carney, President of Behavioral Health and Chief Medical Officer at Magellan Health. Dr. Carney, it's a pleasure to have you on the podcast today.
Thank you so much. It's terrific to be here.
Now, I know we've got a lot to talk about, and there's some really exciting things happening at Magellan right now. But before we dive into our discussion, can you tell me a little bit more about yourself and your background?
Absolutely. It's a long story, but I'll make it short. By training, I am a board certified internal medicine doctor, a board certified psychiatrist, and I have another board in consultation liaison psychiatry, which is the kind of work of psychiatry working in typically a medical setting or working with patients you might identify as medical, like someone, say, who has cancer or HIV/AIDS, or even someone who has delirium from an underlying surgical procedure or infection. And I've spent the bulk of my clinical career working in that setting. I left full-time clinical care and academic medicine to pursue work full-time in administrative medicine, starting as the chief medical officer for Indiana's Medicaid program. And I followed that with working at a regional and then national health plans before coming to Magellan. While I've been at Magellan, I was the SVP for behavioral health. I became the chief medical officer for Magellan Rx Management. I did that because I thought it was really important to know and understand the language that the PBM world speaks. It's often set aside from the rest of healthcare, and I think it's critical we bring that together. And then a few years ago, I was asked to be chief medical officer of the company and then president of the company. So it's been a great journey at Magellan. I've loved it all the while, and we have really transformed the company from being one that is utilization management heavy to one that is clinical program heavy. And that's really a joy to be able to work with the kinds of people at Magellan and all of our partners out there who want to push forward the best kind of behavioral health programs or integrated medical behavioral programs.
Well, that's great to hear. And certainly, amazing to think about all the different experiences you have now wrapped into your role at Magellan Health. What are some of the biggest issues that you're following right now in healthcare? What's top of mind for you?
What remains top of mind for me continues to be the concerns around access and availability of care to individuals who need it. We still are seeing increasing numbers of people coming in to care for the first time. That's a phrase known as penetration. So penetration still continues an upward climb. I think that's incredible because what it tells me is that we're seeing a reduction in stigma against mental health, that people who may not have come into care before now feel like they can come into care, that there's not a barrier of someone thinking you're weak or, that you shouldn't need those kinds of services. So I think it's an incredible change that we're seeing in the industry. The challenge is that we haven't grown enough providers to meet the demand. And so, as we were heading into the nadir of not having enough behavioral health providers in the country, that was expected to be at a low point in 2025, that difference is even greater now, given all of the people who are raising their hand, saying that they need help. So, that's really top of mind issue for me and how we creatively solve that. The second issue is quality of care. So we can throw a lot of people at delivering care, but will the care be, number one, the right care that they need? And number two, will it deliver the right kind of outcome? One of the things that I've seen during the course of the pandemic and following the pandemic is a lot of entrance into the market of services that are either high cost or high tech, but not necessarily services that are leading to improved outcomes where people stay out of the hospital and stay out of the emergency room and get normal courses of treatment for therapy instead of months to years long courses of therapy. And so quality of care is really top of mind as well.
That's fascinating to hear, and certainly appreciate, you know, those points that you made in terms of access to health, making sure that people continue to access mental health care and breaking down the barriers of the stigma, as well as having those providers available and in place. And then too, I really appreciate you talking the quality of care and being able to look at what, you know, will really improve outcomes and be beneficial for communities. I can imagine it's not a one size fits all situation, but really being able to better understand that can make a really big difference in the future.
I really think so. And I think what we see is if an individual is wealthy enough, they can pay cash today to see what might be the best therapists, if you know, and I'm using best in air quotes, but those who refuse to participate in the public mental health system or in the insured mental health system. And so what happens is we then have lower level licenses left to see individuals, say, in the public mental health system. And to me, that's not equality for all. That means that the system is really catering in different parts of it to different levels of income or individuals who may be suffering from different social determinants of health. So I would really love to see a system where we were able to align the presentation, the presenting needs that individual had with the right level of care and the right type of care, whether that was therapy, whether that was coaching, whether that was a digital tool, all the way to inpatient need or residential need. I think that when there's so much direct to consumer advertising, what we see is a shift toward higher levels of care that may not be necessary. And in behavioral health, there's always been the dynamic that community-based tenure, meaning living in the community, living in your home, is the goal, that you don't want to keep people institutionalized and in hospitals for longer than they need to be. And so getting that balance right is really critical, especially at a time when there are entrants into the market who want nothing more than to make money from high levels of care, from delivering higher levels of care. So it's a really important balance. We need more providers. We need those entrants into the market. But I think as a country, we need to align around what those services are, what they should look like, and how we get people to the right level of care. I'll give an example. If I use up all of the therapy spots with LCSWs and psychologists with people who could get better with coaching or could get better with short-term problem-focused therapy, then there won't be any spots left for persons with moderate to severe mental illness who really need those levels of care. And so it's that tension between getting the right level of care for people when they need it. And right now, if there's no availability, it's a real challenge to do that.
That's such a great point, and certainly, you know, a huge issue I can imagine for a lot of different communities, and something that nationally I know that we're grappling with. Now, in looking ahead, what are you most excited about, and what makes you nervous?
I actually am most excited about promulgating the collaborative care model. It's a model that we're rolling out to organizations at Magellan. It's one of those best practice clinical models. Collaborative care has an evidence base of 80 plus clinical trials showing higher quality and better cost savings for individuals if their care is measurement informed and started in the primary care setting, as opposed to waiting for individuals to become so ill that they end up landing in an emergency department or in a hospital. So collaborative care is a terrific model that involves a triad of the primary care or the medical provider, a care manager who is fully dedicated to that group of patients coming through primary care, and a psychiatrist who sits in the background helping to quarterback how the patients are treated based on the information gathered from the care manager and subsequent scores on standardized scales that will help guide and direct what we do next. So for instance, if I have someone who comes in and they score that they have mild depression and they do need services, the psychiatrist would recommend, let's start them on short-term therapy first. Let's give this a try. It's mild depression. They don't need a medication. Let's do this first. And then if I assess them 4 weeks later or 6 weeks later after a course of treatment and they're getting worse, the case would go back to the psychiatrist who would say, okay, now therapy isn't working. The person's gone to therapy. They've tried therapy. Their symptoms are worsening. Now is maybe the time we need medication. In a normal course of settings, a person would go off to therapy and then be lost. They would come back to their primary care provider at some point in time. They wouldn't necessarily be screened again to know how they were doing, if they were better, the same, or worse. And so collaborative care starts on a population level of assessing all the individuals in that practice and identifying and focusing on helping getting those who need care the right level of care, and changing that care more rapidly over time, depending on how they are scoring on the outcomes that are important to them, often measured by scales or measured by the kinds of things that they want to achieve, focused on their own goals and their own outcomes. So it's a really terrific model. It works in primary care settings. It works in other medical settings. And it's one that I really believe in. I think the second thing that we're going to see in the field is a move toward trying to do triage to get individuals who could benefit from coaching or short-term therapy, short-term problem-focused therapy, those kind of tools, so that individuals who do need that longer-term, higher-level therapy and medication management have availability of providers to deliver those services. So I hope that that's the shift we see. We're really promoting that at Magellan, and I think it's really terrific. On the way far out, I'm really curious to see where we're going to land in areas of personalized medicine for behavioral health, whether that is in using functional MRI or genetic testing, a variety of sorts for diagnosing or at least helping to diagnose and follow up treatment of illness. Those kinds of things are known as biomarkers typically, and there is a lot of research being done in this field. There's been a lot done for years without finding any certain biomarkers, but I think we're getting closer as a field every day to figuring out what's the biology behind this that we could use to help better diagnose what someone may or may not have, so we can then better tailor treatments to those individuals. So I think that still is a ways out there, but something really exciting and something we need to keep our eyes on.
Absolutely. That's great to hear. And certainly, you know, love the idea of being able to just really have that more comprehensive care in being able to, you know, have the triage in beneficial collaborative processes between the clinical care models and different specialists and having it in the right setting. Thank you so much for explaining that to us. And then too, you know, when you look ahead, where do you see as being important for the most effective healthcare leaders to succeed in the next 2 to 3 years or so?
I think it's the same traits that the most effective have had over the years, at least in my opinion. I think the first is you have to listen. You have to listen to what's happening coming out of Congress and the federal government in terms of funding, whether it's Congress or agencies. You have to listen to what your frontline workers are telling you about what they're seeing. You have to listen, if you have the ability to what it's like to set in, to go into the healthcare system to see what people struggle with when they go to try to get care. And it sometimes is just ludicrous. You have to listen. And there are all kinds of points that should tell a leader where to look so that when they are making decisions, when they are creating new programs, when they are writing new policy, they understand what the milieu is that this is all happening in and what the need is. So I think that's number one. And number two, you have to be flexible because things are rapidly changing in this industry. And if you would have asked anyone 2 years ago, everything was going to be app-driven and tech driven going forward. And I think what we're seeing now is rebound away from a lot of that and getting back to the basics of we need human delivered care complemented by, not driven by, technology. And that's really, a huge rebound from where we were, say, 2 years ago. So I think that ability to be flexible, that ability to not go with the flow if the data are telling you otherwise, and really be flexible with how you're creating programs that are the best for the members or the patients that you're serving.
I love that. Dr. Carney, thank you so much for joining us on the podcast today. This has been such a fascinating discussion, and I look forward to connecting with you again soon.
Thank you so much. It's been terrific to be here. I love the Becker's meetings and love to be part of your podcast. So thank you so much.